Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Pentagram dedicated to Henry Foreman. In the year of the primal form, the dawn of terrestrial birth.
Well, my friends, welcome to Agitators Anonymous, the first of another year closer to the grave, another year full of resolutions that you won't keep. Well, you might, who knows? Well, keep it to yourself either way. You probably expected the first podcast of the year to be about politics, maybe about me giving out about this, complaining about that, my predictions for the chaos that might be incoming in 2024, all that kind of thing. But you know what? Let's sidestep all that, because earlier in the week, I spoke to my good friend, Adde from Solstafir from Iceland, who was quite the regular guest on the podcast over on my YouTube channel. You saw us discussing the life stories, looking back over bands' careers. Well, we did one for Thin Lizzy the other day, and seeing as yesterday, January the 4th, was the day that Phil died, I thought, well, it's one day late, but let's devote this first podcast to a discussion about possibly, probably, perhaps the greatest rock band. Well, let's say this. Maybe in the pantheon of greatest songs, greatest rock songs of all time, you've got to have a Thin Lizzy track in the top 10. They've got to be up there. They've got to be one of the greatest rock bands on earth. Now, as the discussion unfolds, you'll see that we have different views on different albums, and of the simple fact that some of the albums don't quite have the quality of others and that kind of thing. But, you know, feel free to disagree. Hit me up in the comments and let me know. We're talking about doing Black Sabbath next, or Deep Purple, or who knows. It's always an interesting chat. So rather than political commentary, which is coming, I'm going to make, next week's podcast a bit about what I maybe see incoming for the year ahead. What maybe have the our ruling elite class got planned for us for the year ahead, for our digital servitude and all that kind of thing, and also some stuff about what heavy metal might bring looking back on the past year. I myself released two albums last year. Looking back on an ever more frenetic and crazy music industry, there's just so much music out there. I was reading that perhaps in a couple of months there's going to be up to 200,000 new tracks every day being uploaded to Spotify. How hard is it to find your own piece of this crazy, crazy extreme market? Anyway, the ads, the sponsorship. The sponsorship is from Metal Blade Records, as ever. And next week we're going to start again with some band sponsorship. I'm going to talk about some new bands who are sponsoring the podcast. I'm going to devote a track on a Tuesday completely to some of these new bands so you can listen at your own leisure, not have to hear my dulcet tones going on and on and on before you get to the track. All right, well, so the first episode of a new year is going to be about Thin Lizzy. And that seems like a pretty good place to start Agitators Anonymous. And if you want to see our ugly mugs, go over to my YouTube channel. The link is in the description and go and take a look. All right, then, let me hand you over to Mr. Adelbjorn. I'm not even going to try and say his second name because I'll probably butcher it. But he is wearing a Venom shirt, a Wenom shirt, as you can go and see on the YouTube channel, much to my astonishment and delight. All right, here we go. Your rough guide to Thin Lizzy.
The first thing I notice is you're wearing a Wenom t-shirt.
Yeah. in honor of my friend Averill, I'm sporting my first and only Venom shirt.
Yeah, Venom. Very good, yeah.
Venom, yeah. It's like I said.
It's like an At War With Satan shirt.
Yeah, it is. It's a very nice one.
Very nice. Good.
I'm trying to be a hipster.
Trying to be a hipster, yeah. Trying to be a hipster. Well, I mean, look, we could do a whole podcast about that called Trying to Be a Hipster. Come on.
So, well, since we are now doing a Thin Lizzy show.
Yeah, that's what this is supposed to be, yeah.
Let the audience know that you've been there before, but we did go together.
Yeah.
To fill in its grave one day.
Yeah, we did. We went to, about 5 years ago, isn't it?
2017, 18.
Yeah, maybe we can put that as the fucking thumbnail for this thing. But yeah, we went to fill in its grave, and I think people, it's very, very understated. It's in Hoth. In the north of the city. It's only really, I mean, it's in the area where I grew up. I mean, it's just down from Sutton Cross. It's just down from Hoth and Baldur, from Baldur and all that kind of stuff. And it's a very understated grave. But Philomena lived on the road at the top of the graveyard, which is where my grandmother also lived.
His mother, yeah.
Yeah.
But you told me.
Yeah.
Sorry, you told me that when you grew up, you would see that guy.
That guy.
When you were like a kid, right?
Yeah, I mean, I said that to a few people, well, you know, when we first started interviews. And I said it to one drunk journalist from Rock Hard magazine, and he was like, oh my God. He kind of started welling up. I was like, okay. But look, like, his grandmother lived on the same street as my grandmother. Like, the graveyard, obviously, where he was buried. All my aunts, my mother knew him. My aunt used to cut his hair in the 70s. She used to work in...
Your aunt used to cut Phil Inot's hair?
Yeah, there was a shop, I can't remember the name of it, off Grafton Street. And it was like one of the kind of early cool kid hipster shops. And I think it was a music record shop and a hairdresser's and a clothes boutique, you know?
Yeah.
And she used to work there, and she used to cut his hair. And like, so all this, my mother and her sister knew him. But you'd see him like down at the shops, or like, I remember, and I say that people go, oh, that's not true. But like, I remember being a kid, and there's like this waste ground in front of the train station, which is just right where I live. And I remember that's where we used to hang out and kick a football, and you'd see Phil come down. All right, lads. And he'd, you know, kick a football back and like back and forth a few times before going into the train station. But obviously he had to come down to go to the train station. And it was, you know, you'd see him around, like wandering around. I think most people in Dublin in the late 70s and early 80s, I mean, he was just, if he wasn't, I guess, on tour, he was a fixture of walking around.
So, sorry. So, if this is when you're a kid, so I'm guessing it's around when you were like 10.
No, I mean, it would have been 83, maybe.
83, so he's already famous.
Yeah, he's famous. No, I mean, he was famous in the 70s. So, like, I mean, I was 8 in 83, and I have memories of seeing Phil wandering around and going, all right, lads, and you know what I mean? Because everybody knew who Phil was, obviously, you know.
I mean, he was, you know, there's always a Rory, but there was no U2 when Phil became famous. I mean,
no, so U2. U2 was famous by 83 for sure. You've got Unforgettable Fire and stuff. And I mean, Phil was obviously, he's like the most famous rock star from Ireland, and this 6'3" black guy with an afro. So he's like,
he's a black guy with afro, mustache, and leather pants.
Yeah.
In fucking Ireland.
Yeah, but more Dublin than almost anybody you could imagine, you know. But it's of course you know you notice him as a kid, but not, you know, everybody knew Thin Lizzy and you, of course, Phil. And he was if I'd been a teenager, then he would have been a staple. If you would have seen him drinking in pubs in Hove or drinking in pubs in town. And, you know, I mean, that's just, you would have seen him walking around doing his thing.
Do you know, I mean, we're not going to talk about this too much, but I mean, of course, he was a famous guy. One thing, he's a famous rocker at that time. I mean, talking 70s, that's like, you know, Led Zeppelin is still active and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But he was a black guy in Ireland, and there were not many black guys in Ireland. Do you think, I mean, could he go to the pub without being harassed? I mean, was there racism going on? Or
I think so. I mean, in as much as I am reading or watching interviews with him at the time, I think he seemed to have experienced more racism when he went to England. I think in Ireland, he was so famous by the 70s. And look, I can't really talk completely to it, but at least anecdotally, from what I knew of people at the time, I don't think Ireland was as, riven by racial tension as maybe the UK was, the United Kingdom in the 70s. You know, we didn't have any National Front type stuff. And I think in general, Irish people have always seen themselves as sort of like underdogs, as, you know, we were colonialized, we were oppressed, we were whatever. And the idea that and this is a very, very broad stroke, because of course there's got to be dickheads everywhere, but the idea that we would somehow be racist, I think, in a very broad stroke. Now, of course, there's probably somebody in the comments going, no way, 1976. Like, okay. I wasn't born. Well, I was one then. he talks mostly about, you know, obviously being very aware of it, but not experiencing that much of it. But then again, he made this record, I think, solo in Soho.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think, I remember reading interviews, going back and reading interviews, and he talked about that was some of the first times he was got very into sort of the sort of consciousness of, I suppose, black politics at the time, or whatever that means. And that album sort of represented his step into that. Maybe that's misinduced information. But it definitely, for sure, can't have been easy. But by all accounts, he was a man who was well able to fight his way out of any argument. I mean, that's one thing you hear about him again and again, that he was willing to, you know, to stand up for himself, put his fists. And I think, by all accounts, it got more pronounced when he went to London, because he was, you know, no dogs, no backs, no Irish. He was too.
Yeah, I mean, they hated, of course.
Yeah.
Even white Irish people.
Yeah, for sure. So, I couldn't speak to it completely. You know, people would have to go back and watch interviews with him, but I don't think it was the sense I get that he was a much, and speaking to my aunts and speaking to other people I knew, because don't forget, like, lots of my family are from the same area. They would have had, like, my uncle drank with him in the early 70s, and my uncle, who just spent a bunch of days with, you know, drank with him in the 70s and stuff. And they were all, and you hear nothing but anecdotally hilarious stories and good humor. And I never, they don't say anything about, oh, this one time this guy said this, and, you know, that kind of thing. So,
well, I did, since I mentioned the graveyard, I had heard that, you know, I knew that his mom lived right around the block and she would visit his grave every day.
Yeah.
And so before that, was it the same time? I don't know. We were playing Dublin once. Solstad were playing Dublin. And, you know, being the Thin Lizzy fan, I was saying, you know, love Thin Lizzy, blah, 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 and been, you know, inspired by Phil Lynott, to love Phil Lynott, and I would like to dedicate the song to the great late Phil Lynott.
Yeah.
And we play Fiara and all that stuff. And anyway, so day after, I get a Facebook email message from a random attendant, a girl that was at the gig. She says, hey, I was at your show yesterday in Dublin. Loved the show. I happen to know Philomena, Phil Lynott's mom. I told her I was at a rock concert last night. And this lovely Icelandic lads were paying respect to your son.
Yeah.
And apparently Philomena loved it. So she said, oh, that's lovely. Tell them they're invited to tea next time they're in Dublin.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, like, there's a very great American heavy metal band called Argus, Really, really good band. And they all, this is maybe 10 or 12 years ago. Actually, maybe it's more, maybe it's 2010 or 11. And they all went to visit Phil's grave. And I know Phil and Philomena happened to come down and invited him up to the house for tea. And she even let the drummer play his drum kit, which was set up in the room.
So when I was there with you, I was too shy to go find her house.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know exactly where her house is, but I think the time when we were there, maybe she was getting pretty old. I'm not sure if she still came down every day.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I know at least 15, 20 people who've been in her house for tea and have been in Phil's room. And like, she
fucking
let the first guy play his drums, and he came back to the gig that evening, yeah. And he was just like literally like just in awe and shock, you know. But that's what she made. I mean, she was always around or coming down and, you know, meeting people who would have come to the grave for a pilgrimage. You know, it's sort of unlucky that I guess at the day we went. I mean, yeah. She would have been pretty old then, I guess. But yeah.
Okay. So brief introduction to Phil Lynott's life here.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it is that if you think about it, he's got to be one of the most iconic rock stars, like whoever lived. I mean, to be this huge, tall black guy with an afro playing like, you know, metal, rock, and also lots of other things as well, but in a distinctly sort of white man's world of rock and metal, whatever. It's and from Dublin and from Ireland. I mean, I'll add them all up and it's like an incredible sequence.
Yeah, I mean, this is a minority, like, you know, it's just a crazy minority group.
Yeah. And there he is, you know, I mean, as we're going to discuss, you know, writing songs with some of the greatest rock songs of all time, you know.
So tell me, when you were different, you know, when you're growing up, are you guys listening to Thin Lizzy, or is it just the boys are back in town? Or because I know that you guys did not grow up with loving the first 2-3. I'm talking about the Primordial gang. You didn't really love the first 2-3 Thin Lizzy albums. You were more like into later heavy metal, or
yeah. I mean, the thing about it is, well, I mean, if Kieran was sitting here, he'd talk about the first three, how much he loves them, and like, but I mean, the problem wasn't the problem for me growing up. I had a bunch of friends who were much more into Lizzy. They had a Lizzy covers band. And there was a kind of, you know, that sort of early teenage tension of, well, no, I like this, I like this, I like the other. And we were sort of, I was trying to start maybe a thrash metal band or whatever. And so there's always that thing of when you're a teenager, which is like, you know, you sort of don't want to check out all the things that your friends that you're are sort of, you know, wagging their finger and telling you, oh, Slayer shit, listen to Vagabonds of the Western World. And I was like, no, you know what? Fuck that. I want to listen to Hell Awaits. And actually, the same is still true.
You're saying it was too close and popular and commercial to listen to Lizzy?
I don't think that at all. I don't think that at all. I mean, the Lizzy I would have grown up with was, of course, Live and Dangerous. And, you know, the sort of late 70s, early 80s. That would have been the, you know, the odd vinyl that nestled in among myself. But I would just happen to be much more into Judas Priest and Black Sabbath and Iron Maiden and this stuff. So the first three records were kind of a mystery to me. In fact, all this morning I've been listening to them, you know, swatting up for this test, you know. And it's very much like they don't speak to me much, although they are occasionally absolutely brilliant. But they seem to me very much sit alongside where UFO were in the beginning, where Deep Purple were in the beginning, where Status Quo were in the beginning. Do you know what I mean? Before they found their sort of rock feet, their rock sea legs, in that there's an awful lot of, I mean, at least for Lizzy, this sort of Irish mysticism, this sort of Van Morrison, Astral Weeks, sort of there's funk, there's soul. Phil stretches his voice in ways that he seemed to kind of curtail when it got more rock.
I mean, I agree with this. So let's dive into the first one. I mean,
okay.
I have only the first two on CDs. I bought them in great record store in Copenhagen.
Hey, look at that. Wow.
Accord. It's a great great record store in Copenhagen. I bought both of them, the CDs here.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I have these two on CDs. I buy this, I mean, when I started sort of going into the past of Thin Lizzy. So I agree with you. I think this is like the first Book of Talisman, the purple stuff. It's even like 80s Pantera stuff before Cowboys. I mean, they are becoming what they became. They are not there yet.
Yeah, I think you could say the same for Status Quo when they were like, when they were the first.
I know nothing about Status Quo.
The first Pictures of Matchstick Men or the 60s Status Quo, where there's a bit more Beatles, there's a bit more sort of like, they've all got mild haircuts and they're wearing like matching tunics. And it's before they found the denim and denim. You know what I mean? And UFO, the first two UFO are very similar as well. They're kind of like experimental, psychedelic, kind of like garage.
But this is, I mean, this is 1972 and 1971. I mean,
yeah,
the Beatles are still, I mean, going on in 1971. Or did they quit in 1970? I don't know.
Yeah,
so it's a long time ago. I mean, there was a different world to 1971. Well, Zeppelin do the first in what, 70, 69?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that first album, and what? I mean, it doesn't really have a hit, does it? I mean, or what the label would consider. The band then moved to London that year. I mean, see, here's the thing. It's like the Friendly Ranger at Clontarf Castle. Clontarf Castle is literally the castle just before the graveyard we went to, you know what I mean? What we used to go drinking. Like, I put up a photo on Instagram of me in corpse paint in like 93 or something with a fucking stick on fire. That was taken at Clontarf Castle. So,
but can you imagine if the band would have broken up after these two albums?
Yeah.
The legacy wouldn't be there.
They wouldn't remember it as a kind of, there's a strange kind of, sort of, I'm not going to say whimsical is not the right word, but a sort of Yeatsian post, sort of Van Morrison-y kind of fascination with Irish and Irish mysticism, that sort of an Irish traditional music which permeates these. And at the time, of course, when I was a kid, I mean, everything had to be like Slayer or Faster. And I was just like, I just didn't have the patience to sit through this when I was 13 or 12, you know?
No, I mean, I love this band, but this is just not interesting enough.
No,
and I remember because we planned this show here about Thin Lizzy more than a year ago. When I was diving into more of these albums, I was listening to podcasts about, and there was one guy that thought that this was the first album was the best, and I was like, "Are you fucking serious?"
Yeah.
So there are some people that really love this stuff.
Oh, I mean, there are people in Ireland who wouldn't even count Thunder and Lightning as proper Thin Lizzy. Like, you know what I mean? There are people who from that early 70s generation, and they preferred this, that there was a whistle bit and that it was acoustic guitars. And I mean, I get it. There is some beautiful sounds and tones and textures on these records every now and again. Sure. You know, they kind of go at the spoken word bits. But there are some, we go to the Shades of Blue Orphanage when you've got an early version of Sarah on there, but you've also got the whiskey in the jar. I mean, that's kind of what made the band.
No, sorry, Whiskey in the Jar, it doesn't arrive already, man. That arrives on the third album.
Really? Because it's on the deluxe version of Shades here.
Yeah, Easy Tiger. We're not doing the deluxe versions.
Oh, yeah, I see. It's not on the original version in 72.
No. It arrives on the third album. Well, that's a different... I'm not going to say, I mean, obviously, I think these are like siblings, the first two here.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it's just like, I don't want to forget how to jive. You know, Buffalo Gal, Babyface, Chatting Today, Call the Police. I mean, yeah, okay, but.
Okay. Yeah. So, and then we go to the next one.
Vagabonds of the Western World. So this is 73.
I'm excited here. Hold on. Give me a second.
Yeah, I should have got my vinyls out as well, but we can use your
my version here. I'm not going to show them all here.
But yeah,
my version of Vagabonds of the Western World, original copy.
Oh yeah,
check this out. What does that say?
Irish Tour, Christmas '73. Wow, what's in the back of it? Looks amazing.
It's a sticker.
Wow, cool.
Original copy, dude.
The artwork is incredible. See, here's where everything began to sink into place. I mean, the first two, the artwork and the aesthetic, I don't really understand at all. But if you saw
this, this is original copy that I bought in Camden
Oh, yeah.
I think I paid a lot of money for this, but this is 1973.
Yeah.
Decca
Records. Decca were going to drop them, apparently, and then this album did okay for them. So it says on Wikipedia. But it's...
So here they are not heavy metal band yet, of course.
No. I mean, this is where it begins to come into shape, you know.
But this is still with Eric Bell.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Eric Bell was, of course, a founding member along with Brian and Phil.
Yeah.
This album I bought on CD many, many, many years ago. And I listened to it in my Toyota like 9,000 times. So this is sort of the album that got me in love with Thin Lizzy. I mean, Boys Are Back in Town is just like listening to only Ace of Spades and calling yourself a Motorhead fan.
So just to put this into context, I'm just looking at Wikipedia. This is what it says. In late 1972, the band embarked upon a high-profile tour of the UK with Slade and Suzy Quatro. And around the same time, Decca released Thin Lizzy's version of a traditional Irish ballad, Whiskey in the Jar, as a single. The band didn't consent to it. They weren't angry at the release, the feeling the song did not represent their sound or image. So it seems that Whiskey in the Jar came out
because on the CD, that's not being true to my words here. Whiskey in the Jar is not on this album.
Yeah,
it's on the CD. It's on the because this only has like eight. This only has eight songs.
So
it comes on the CD.
Yeah. So what I mean is that they must have recorded it as a version before this album, and then the label were sitting on it, and I went, you know what, chuck this out. And that became the hit, and the band got pissed off with that. So the first recording of Whiskey in the Jar is before that. My friend Dennis is going to be watching this, and he's going to be like, no. But come on, Dennis.
So the point is, Whiskey in the Jar ain't recorded for a album.
No, that I don't think it is. I mean, apparently it has no bass either.
No, there's no bass in it. It's only guitars and... Which makes this album even more weird, or dare I say hitless album, because it doesn't have a super hit. I love these songs. I mean, Mother, Mama Nature Sat, Hero and the Madman.
Mm.
I mean, all this Tora Lora Lora Lora, this very Irish, very folk Irish things in it.
Yeah, it's got some great songs. It's also still got this, I mean, it's got the rocker on it, you know, which is like the...
Sure.
And it's still got an awful lot of still got soul and funk and these sort of acoustic-y ballady type songs, which I think were just not really clicking with the rock audience. You know, look at that.
Rockers.
Yeah.
This is the best of album. So, it doesn't really... I just had to buy it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you'd have to buy it for the cover. I mean, that's alone, you know.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I really love this album, but we're still not there yet. I mean, there's so much more stuff.
And it's very interesting, and if you think about it, the bands back then were given a couple of albums to get to the point where they could be something a label could work with. They were kind of grown, because all those bands, Priest as well. I mean, look at the first Priest record, Rock and Roll. I mean, what's that really? Not really fully.
Rock and Roll isn't really metal, Priest. No.
So you've got, same with Purple, same with UFO, same with lots of bands. They were given time to develop, that just sort of got cut shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter, you know?
But they have found their artwork guy here, because this is the same guy that did Jailbreak and all their albums.
Yeah, yeah.
This is an amazing album cover.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I mean, if you saw that in the record store, you'd be like, "What the fuck? Look at that! It is amazing."
We should
mention him, by the way, Jim Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, exactly. Jim Fitzpatrick. It even says here.
Yeah. Yeah, and he lived around the corner from my parents as well. In fact, he sent me an email once saying that he was aware of Primordial.
Is he still alive?
He's still alive, yeah. Yeah, this was about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and I thought, I wonder, could we get him for an album cover? And then
why haven't you?
Because it doesn't really fit. But also, it was just at the moment where Darkthrone managed to nab him for one of the records. Was it Underground Resistance or something, or Circle the Wagons?
Did they get him for that? Okay.
I think so. There's one with a warrior with a sword, which is Jim Fitzpatrick, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I know. But then it's so you buy album 4, 74, Nightlife.
That's, it, I mean, okay. I'm just going to say I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's because I think Vagabonds is a great album, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Let me see here.
Yeah, you do the vinyls because you have more vinyls of Lizzie than me, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, Nightlife is here.
Okay.
This is the first album as a...
A four piece, yeah. Between guitars.
And look at that white dress, man.
Yeah, only he can pull that off. First. Well, Lemmy can pull that off. But yeah, yeah.
They look the part here.
But it's not until you get to Shalala at the end.
Is this the first album with the iconic logo as well?
It looks like it, yeah.
Yeah.
The more heavy metal logo. But like this record, I agree with you. Like Philomena, Frankie Carroll, She Knows as an opener. I mean, it's okay. Shalala is quite hard at the end. Shalala is it like there's a made the
yeah,
best.
Yeah, I mean. I think, okay, Still in Love with You. I like that one.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Maybe the best song here. But, I mean, here we have, of course, Brian Robertson.
Yeah.
The arrival of Brian Robertson.
Yeah, so Bell quits
after three albums. And you get sort of... So this is sort of the first... Let me dare say classic lineup. I mean... Yeah. Bell can't be, it's weird that he's not in the classic lineup because he was the founding member, did three albums, but having Robertson and or Scott Corum, I mean, Scott Corum's got to be, a classic.
Listen to this, right? So according to Wikipedia, they secured a deal with Phonogram. The resulting album Nightlife was a disappointment for the band due to its soft production and underdeveloped style. Robertson described Ron Nevison's production as naff. And Gorham said the record was ridiculously tame. So it seems to me that the engineer, producer, really tried to move the band into a kind of solely pop direction. You can hear it on the record. Yeah. The record is missing some edge. You get it at Shalala at the end, but it sounds like almost recorded from a different session, you know?
This is Jim Fitzpatrick as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
But, I mean, this is a great album cover. And, I mean, this is... Oh, the artwork and the photography and the logo and everything, the haircuts, the dresses, it looks killer, but it's not a killer album. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's not. It's not at all. It's not. So realistically, I mean, we can push on to Fighting, which is a weird cover. You probably have Fighting there, so do you?
Yeah, Fighting has... So I'm not sure what is the original, but I have, of course, this one.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean... I adore this album.
Yeah. Well, the original fighting Phil's got his hands up with a kind of metal bar like this, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's the original one.
When we go to the break, I might find mine somewhere. But
so this is not the original.
Maybe it could be because the cover has changed region to region, you know? But
this here is produced by Phil Lynott.
Interesting, and it's a big. This is where they begin to feel really like a band with a bit of. I mean, this is full of bangers, you know.
You have Rosalie here. Of course, it's a Bob Seger song.
Which I don't. I mean, you start your album with a Bob Seger cover.
Well, it's kind of it's like Mexican radio.
Well, but Bob Seger's that. I mean, the Bob Seger song must be only from, 71, 72? So they're covering a song that's only 2 or 3 years old.
That's even more weird.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good song.
And then, of course, they have one of my favorite songs, For Those Who Love to Live.
Yeah.
Of course, it's...
It's about... Suicide's a Stone Cold.
It's about... What's his name again? The United guy. The football guy. What's his name?
Oh, George Best.
It's about George Best, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, you've seen the pictures of them all hanging out together, because I think Philomena had a hotel near Manchester, and it used to be their drinking kind of den, and you see pictures of, like, Lemmy hanging out there, Tony Iommi, George Best, all sorts of, like, 70s.
But here, it's funny, because the only song that's written by Downey here is For Those Who Love to Live. and maybe did the lyrics, we don't know. But you can hear, I mean, it's the vice versa, of course, but you can hear Metallica here in Trinity. Yeah. For those who love to live, cool, trademark, iconic twin guitars in a cool way have arrived here.
Yeah.
So this is where it's starting to happen.
Yeah, and the weird thing is there are twin guitars on that Nightlife, you know what I mean? But they don't, because Rock and Roll is 75. So it's like Lizzie's is first, but it's like they didn't make their mark properly with Nightlife when it comes to the twin guitar thing. It's only really coming into full.
Yeah, but you know, but doing it in a cool way. I mean, this is here, it is, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else is on, what else is on here? I mean, King's Vengeance.
For those who love to live, Suicide is great. Wild One, Finding My Way Back, King's Vengeance. Still a dog. I mean, there are some songs that ain't masterpieces here. I'll admit that. But I really, really, really like this album.
Okay.
One of my favorites. One of my favorites.
On that note, let me stop this and I'll send you the link to the next one. That's okay, because Zoom is going to disappear now in a second. Hang on.
Okay. Where are you sending that?
I'll send it to your... God, it's... Sorry, it's right in the middle of the fucking thing. Okay, so my version of fighting has the iron bar.
Oh, yeah, you have it there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which one do you think looks cooler? They both look cool, actually. This one is...
I don't know.
I think this one is more iconic, though, eh?
There's more hippie stuff on mine.
Yeah, yours is more hippie stuff, definitely.
Yeah.
How fucking cool does Phil look on that, though? He looks fucking...
Hold on, but you have the same 10 songs, right?
I need to put my fucking glasses on again. Yeah, same 10 songs. All right, look at the back cover, man. That's fucking... Now, that's pretty fucking remote.
Ah, that's better. Yours is better, because this is a bad photo here and some individual photos here. I think yours is actually cooler.
Yeah,
but you have the same 10 songs, right? Starting with Rosalie and ending with Ballad of a Hard Man.
Yeah, they look like a fucking heavy metal Ramones here. Look, they look cool as fuck.
Exactly, very Ramonesy.
Yeah, yeah. So this is
mine is more like the Jimi Hendrix experience.
Certainly, yeah. This is not an original one though. This is not like a 1980 or something. But anyway, yeah. So Rosalie. What a weird way to start off with. Anyway.
Rosalie.
Yeah, I mean, it's brilliant, but it's...
Even Motorhead covered it later.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, yeah. So it's now we get to Jailbreak.
It's Jailbreak already.
Yeah, it is, right?
No.
Johnny the Fox. Okay.
Johnny the Fox is, I don't know, some friends of mine adore that album.
It is great. It's a classic record. I mean, Massacre. This is when they really...
Sorry. Yeah, I agree. Massacre, one of the best songs ever.
Yeah, and that could be... This is proper... This is a heavy metal song, Massacre, you know?
You have the same, you know, right?
Yeah, mine looks a little bit darker. Is yours Gatefold?
No. Show me the back.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, incredible artwork. It's just fucking amazing, isn't it? Jim Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Let's have a look. Yeah, I think it's the same. This is totally the same.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Vertigo.
But, I mean, look, Johnny, Rocky, Borderline. Don't Believe a Word, of course.
Don't Believe a Word is amazing.
Yeah.
Fool's Cult, I love that.
Yeah.
Massacre, one of the best songs ever.
Yeah.
There is some... So I had a VHS. I can't remember what's the original... It was an original, official live, Thin Lizzy live on VHS. I can't remember where it was from, but I just... The song that I remember was Massacre.
Yeah.
So it was on the set list.
Yeah.
The live version of Massacre that we had says just goosebumps stuff.
Yeah, it's incredible. And it is, it's heavy metal. I mean, Massacre's heavy metal, I think, you know. Here's a story. I always used to argue this with my friends back when we were kids. I'd always go, Thin Lizzy doesn't have a Highway to Hell. And it's because of of songs like Sweet Marie. It's like, guys.
Sure, yeah. They're always flirting with the folk.
Funk, folk, soul.
Yeah, sort of flirting with them. You know, Iron Maiden didn't flirt with folk music.
Let's pick a film of 70s contemporary like Purple or AC/DC. It's like Lizzy always had a tiny bit of kind of like, you can tell, like maybe kind of cocaine ideas in the studio. They're like, let's do that. And somebody didn't go, I don't know about that. Maybe. But there was always flirting a bit with funk soul, as if there would be some crossover, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And the songs
maybe that's what makes them so great, because this is a very original band.
Yeah, no, you're right, actually. And that would have been lost on me when I was 16. Arguing that Highway to Hell is better, but you say it. It is. It's part of the sort of rich tapestry of Lizzy that makes them so different from everybody else.
Yeah.
You're right. I guess it's just that for me, the songs resonate a bit less with me.
But even funny, we agree with this. But this massacre.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a.
So yeah. It's the first real. I mean, they're really coming into a really big Purple period here. This is I think the greatest period of the band.
Obviously. What do you mean? I mean, Thin Lizzy.
No, they've really found their kind of feet now as a proper band, I think.
Yeah, here they are up there doing. I mean, okay, we have Fighting, which is off. They're still here. I mean, they're going up.
Yeah, let's have a look. Let's see what Wikipedia says. When do we get to Boys Are Back in Town, you know? Well, that's not...
That's next album, dude.
Next album, yeah, okay. A successful multi-band tour in support of Status Quo. Opening with Seeger's Rosalie. The Wikipedia says the album showed the first real evidence of the twin guitar sound that would lead the band towards... Yeah, okay.
Well, are you talking about Johnny the Fox?
Yeah. This is Wikipedia that's speaking now.
But like we spoke about, you can hear it more clearly a little bit before on Fighting.
It reached number 60 in the UK album charts, and the singles did not chart. Okay.
Because there's no Boys Are Back in Town or Jailbreaker.
Boys Are Back in Town is the song that, saved the band. Well, not saved the band, but broke the band, I guess, you know.
Well, then again, Boys Are Back in Town almost didn't end up on the album.
Yeah, no, they didn't think it was the right song.
No, they didn't think it was a good song.
No, which is absolutely insane. Don't believe a word on Celtic mythology. Okay, I don't think this is Wikipedia. I don't think Don't Believe a Word is about Celtic mythology. Sorry, Wikipedia. But touring, even though they weren't breaking through in album sales and hit single, they were becoming a band that was pulling people on tour, you know.
But at this time, I mean, I remember I have the book here somewhere about Phil Lynott. He was heavily into drugs at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was doing a lot of partying. And I think maybe around this time or the next tour, it would say that they would be in America and... He would be, partying till 5-6 in the morning every day, and his health became worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Came sick on tour, tours being cancelled. All that sort of reality hit them. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you reading there?
I'm just trying to get things. See, it's weird. Like, Bad Reputation is a record that I always thought was earlier in the canon. Because I wasn't really paying as much attention. But anyway, we'll get to that. But yeah, I mean, it's all hinging really on Boys Are Back in Town and this, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, then again, I mean, what do you think? I mean, okay, I like to use the metaphor. Hold on. Where's my Jailbreak? It's not here. Great.
Has to be.
No, I have it on CD somewhere.
But this, though, you've seen this, of course, right? This, I mean,
I don't own this version.
How cool is that?
But this, I mean, okay, let me put it this way. I mean, if you remove Ace of Spades from the Ace of Spades album, I still think it's a 10 out of 10 album. Amazing album.
I agree with you.
If you remove Boys Are Back in Town from this album,
what do you
think about it?
Well, let's have a look through the songs. This is a... I mean, again, how cool is this? When you open it out and you see... They're like, there's fucking aliens, fucking...
This is a little bit like Kiss, if you think about it. Because they're superheroes there.
Yeah, it's a bit 70s cartoons vibe in it. Well, okay, but I mean, the song Jailbreak is a Stone Cold classic, right?
Yeah.
Angel from the Coast. I do actually love that song. Running Back.
Well,
Romeo and the Lonely Girl, again, speaks to the kind of diversity you're talking about.
It's another Sarah, almost.
Yeah. Warriors, great. Boys Are Back in Town, what can you say? Fight or Fall, great cowboy song. Emerald,
Cowboy song is amazing. I love... Cowboy song was pushed as a single of this album.
Yeah, it's Emerald finishing off, goddamn. And Emerald is the only one that's written by all of them.
So, Cowboy song, Emerald are two of the highlights here, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Well, Jailbreak and... The Boys Are Back in Town, of course, sort of the radio-friendly ones.
Yeah, it's... Well, I mean... Yeah. Okay, so the end of side one, I could... Yeah. But having said that, Angel from the Coast, it's the Jailbreak. The warrior locked himself into his video scanner and gazed through the universe until he came up upon Dimension 5.
This is very, very much Kiss.
The story at the back... but yeah, it's interesting. Emerald is the only one that has a co-write with all of them. Other than that, it's just Lynott. And then one song, Lynott, Robertson, Angel from the Coast.
Who wrote Boys Are Back in Town? Did he write it by himself?
Just Lynott. That's what it says.
Okay.
So he wrote all the songs except the final song, but Emerald, which you can hear has some drum writing influence.
Yeah.
And that's a blueprint for folk metal, if you want it right there.
Would you say this is the best album? I mean, it's not Back in Black or Highway to Hell.
No.
It's, you know.
That's really hard to say. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, have you got Bad Reputation on vinyl there? I only have it on CD.
I have it here.
Okay.
Bad Reputation.
In my head, I had Bad Reputation before.
This is funny. This is from a store in the Göteborg.
Oh yeah, Gothenburg. Wow. So Bad Reputation is 77. They're back to a three piece.
Well, this is so funny because it's recorded as a three piece, but they're four in the back.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah,
that's strange. So who's on the back? Is Robertson on the back?
I think Robertson is out of the band. He's not here.
Yeah, no.
This is some Robertson in and out stuff because, like we know, there were so many. We haven't really gone well. So since we spoke about them being a four piece, let's not forget about the guitar stuff in and out.
Mm.
So from Nightlife, it's Brian Robertson and Scott Corum, right?
That's
cute. And that stays on Fighting. It stays on Johnny the Fox. It stays on Jailbreak. Robertson and Corum, right?
Okay, so here's what happened. An important U.S. tour, December 76, Brian Robertson injured his hand with a broken bottle in a fight. He said he wasn't drunk. Yeah.
Right.
That he just went there to get a meal. Lynott agreed and replaced Robertson with Gary Moore for the tour. Yeah,
on the tour.
With supporting Queen.
Imagine that? Thin Lizzy supporting Queen?
Yeah, and there's some shows with AC/DC as well in the States. Imagine that.
So obviously he's not on this album.
Hmm.
Well, okay, sorry. It says here that he is the bad guys. It says here. The bad guys.
Right.
The sash here that he's in the band, but he's not on the cover. I mean...
Very strange. Also, I think the cover is a kind of regression. To me, the cover looks like an early 70s cover. considering where the artwork was going. You know, that's maybe why in my head I thought it was, because it looks to me like Free or something, you know? Or
yeah. But he doesn't, I mean, Brian Robertson wasn't really the main songwriter here.
Oh, and that's, I mean, that's when he gets sacked, and Moore stays on, you know?
So, because the next album, next album has Gary Moore.
Well, let's look at what's, I mean, Bad Reputation. What's on Bad Reputation? I mean, you got the title track, which is a fucking Stone Cold killer.
Okay, sorry. Side one is Soldier of Fortune. Great song.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad Reputation.
Yeah.
Great song.
Stone Cold.
Opium Trail. Good song.
Yeah.
Southbound. Love it.
Yeah.
Side two is one of the best songs ever with the most iconic bass lines ever. Dancing in the Moonlight.
Yeah.
And talk about being a diverse band.
Mm.
Dancing in the Moonlight. It's crazy. Even the Smashing Pumpkins covered it.
Yeah. I knew you'd get them in somewhere.
Yeah. We have put Metallica in it already.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a song that when I was a kid, I was like, ugh, come on. But
exactly. You didn't understand it.
No, now you see what a genius song it is, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it is genius. Killer Without a Cause is one of my favorite deep cuts, Lizzie Deep Cuts. That's a great song.
Yeah.
Downtown Sundown, yeah. Dear Lord, The Woman's Gonna Break Your Heart, again. That's
amazing song.
Good song, yeah. It's a great song.
It's a great song.
This is a fucking killer of a record.
It's a really good album. This is a really, really good album.
And it's one that I think when I was a kid went under my radar. And I don't know why. Really don't know why.
Because you were listening to Venom and Bathory.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. But even when I was still listening to stuff like this, but it's just, maybe I just was too angry to understand it properly, you know, or too...
Probably.
Whatever, you know.
But so
I only like the Eternal War.
This is the last album, well, with or without Robertson.
Yeah, he's literally sacked then after his...
So he doesn't. He doesn't come back. So he's sacked.
Yeah,
this is the last album. Yeah. That he's, you know.
And then we get to, I guess, the album that the.
Well, we're not doing. Sorry for interrupting. We're not doing live albums here, right? Are we doing it? Okay, we can do it. Okay.
You can't really ignore it. You know, I mean, okay. It's one of the most, perhaps, the greatest live album ever made. So you can't really ignore it, and it's also the one that most people know or have, or it kind of beautifully captures all the previous years and puts them together, even though apparently some of it isn't exactly live, but I mean, you know.
I have a very, well, not a fancy version, but it's
okay.
Very new version.
Mine is original one.
Let me see the gatefold of yours. Same.
Yeah. And the inner sleeve has also pictures in mine. Have you got that?
Oh, la la. See.
Oh, look at that. Wow.
I don't, well, maybe I'm hoping this is the photo of the original.
Must be. That's not in my one. My one just has pictures, more pictures of the band.
It says here the tape was baked in May 98. So they took the tape and baked it and probably redid this.
Mm.
Okay.
I mean, it's just, this is the one that if you didn't have the time or, you know, you weren't sure where to start with this 1970s, this just kind of, just like Unleashed in the East for people who didn't want to go into all 70s.
Live After Death or Kiss Alive or...
It was a very big thing in the 70s and 80s, which was to kind of scoop up a band's 3 or 4 album career, make it into one great live records. Kind of like
hits, you know? Let's, because this is sort of the proper best one here.
Yeah.
Side one, Jailbreak, Emerald, Southbound, Rosalie. Okay.
Yeah.
Side two, Dancing in the Moonlight, Massacre, Still in Love with You, Johnny the Fox.
Yeah.
Amazing. Side three, Cowboy Song, The Boys Are Back in Town, Don't Believe a Word, Warrior, Are You Ready?
Yeah.
Side four, Suicide, Shalala. Baby Drives Me Crazy. Where's that from again?
I had to cover it. Oh, no, it's not. Baby Drives Me Crazy.
No, it's their own song, yeah. It is, but even co-written by Brian Robertson.
Well, it must be from 76 somewhere then, yeah.
Yeah, and then they end on The Rocker.
Yeah.
Okay, but this is a great, you know,
yeah,
great set list.
I mean, you can't, it's just hard to beat, really, isn't it?
So, I mean, this is among the Unleashed in the East, Kiss Alive, Live After Death, Made in Japan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's maybe even, I mean, the only live record that I, from that sort of period, I mean, I prefer, If You Want Blood, You Got It, the AC/DC one, is fucking storming. But this is, I mean, this is arguably, like, if you were to just own this, it might be,
okay.
Greatest compilation of songs ever, you know? Like, that's how you write a set list, you know?
Do we know how much is fake on this? Because, as you know,
yeah,
even parts on Let It Be, If You Want Blood, is fake.
Mm.
Kiss Alive is totally fake.
Is it?
Kiss Alive.
Yeah, well, I don't know really anything about
it. It's completely fake.
Okay.
It's almost like Live on Dead.
Live in the Raw by Wasp. Yeah,
yeah, it's completely. I think I don't know how much fake is on Made in Japan, but I don't know.
I mean, I know Unleashed in the East they had to replace the vocals because Rob had flu, but everything else is supposed to be okay. I don't know.
Yeah, I've heard very likely it's.
I've heard bits of this, but then again, maybe that's just what bands did to just. That's what
I think. That's what bands did. It's a two in one. It's a best of album and live. It's a product itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, the AC/DC did make a live video at the time, and it's almost exactly the same as If You Want Blood, You Got It, you know, that Paris show, 79.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but the track list, that's how you do a track list. If you're.
But isn't If You Want Blood, You Got It from the Glasgow show?
It is, yeah. The Glasgow show is online as well, yeah. So.
Okay.
Right.
Anyway, so now.
At 78. This is what really makes them, it just blows them up. That Boys Are Back in Town, Alive and Dangerous are really, you know.
So, apparently.
Okay, hang on. According to Wikipedia, there is some disagreement over just how much of the album is actually recorded live. Producer Tony Visconti claimed that the only parts that were not overdubbed were the drums and the audience. Wow. However, Brian Robson has disputed this, saying that he had refused Lennon's request to re-record a guitar solo and that the only overdubs were backing vocals and some guitar parts by Gorham. He says it's not true. He says it's bollocks. Gorham concurs, stating that he attempted to re-record a solo but did not recreate the live sound. Gorham says he redid one rhythm track and a few backing vocals, but that's it. The album reached number 2 in the UK album charts and was ranked the greatest live album of all time by Classic Rock magazine. Okay.
Okay.
So Robertson departed. Robertson plays on this despite the previous bust up. So he leaves in 1978.
Okay.
So then Gary Moore returns. So
I have 2.
Okay, you have 2. I have one.
I have one bought in Akkord in Denmark.
Okay. Where the fuck is mine?
One is bought here in Iceland. Okay.
We'll look at yours. Yeah. We don't have to look at mine. I'm sure mine is the same.
Same. Let me see. Inlay. Are those the same? Well, yeah. Same.
Okay.
Same inlay. I mean, I'm going to say this is the best album.
Yeah. Let's look at the track list then.
I mean, so this is what, 79, 77? 79.
So here's the problem, right? Okay, do anything you want to do, Stone Cold Classic, Tough in the Street and Town, good. S&M, I don't think S&M is a great song.
Waiting for an Alibi.
Classic.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Sarah is not the best song here.
Forget it. That's a cocaine idea. That's just like, nobody wants to hear about how much you love your daughter or your son.
No. I mean, you know, exactly.
Get out of here.
Got to Give It Up.
Yeah.
One of the best songs.
Yeah. Get out of here.
Get out of here. I love it. With Love, amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing song.
Roisin Dubba.
What do you call this? Roisin Dubba. Black Rose.
Yeah.
Roisin Dubba. amazing song.
Yeah. I you know, to be honest with you, I think I prefer Jailbreak to this record.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'll have to call it even. I'm sorry. But, you know, they're just a really... It's funny because I have... So I'm going to take you a little bit back here. So this album here, see?
Yeah.
This takes me... You've been to Iceland a few times. You've been to the Eisnaflug Festival, right?
Yeah, this does look a bit Icelandic. Yeah.
So, no, sorry. So when I was driving there...
Oh, yeah.
Once. It's an 8-hour drive. I listened to this album. It's the only CD I listened to for 8 hours.
Really? Wow.
There and to the back. So this takes me driving 8 hours to the East Fjords of Iceland, right? So this is in my fucking DNA. So see this apartment that I'm in here? You've been to my apartment, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So in 2003, I bought this apartment in 2003.
Yeah.
So when I'm painting it by myself for a few days, this is the only CD I listen to.
Okay.
For a few days. So these two albums are in my fucking DNA. So, you know, it's they're special to me.
I painted my grandmother's house once only listening to Third of the Mortal, but there you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, so I get it. Sometimes we have favorites for those particular other reasons that aren't normal reasons.
Yeah, yeah. But then again, this is, of course, Gary Moore.
Yeah.
And the classic Thin Lizzy lead. I mean, Brian Robertson was great. But, I mean, have you seen Gary Moore live in Sydney, the video?
Yeah, yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, he's on
I mean, that motherfucker.
He's on another level, really, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And he's just, I'm like, how the fuck can he do that? And I think that video, and it's not even Brian Drowney on drums. It's weird. It's the guest guy.
Isn't it? No?
No, it's some replacement guy.
Oh.
But the band in that form, I think it's 78.
Yeah, 78, 79.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's fucking brilliant.
Incredible gig by a band.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. So getting Gary Moore from the band, I mean, sure, a couple of songs can make an album, but I think Waiting for an Alibi, Got to Give It Up, is what makes this close to the greatest.
Yeah. So, well, I would pick, for now, I would still pick Jailbreak as my favorite.
Yeah. But, yeah.
So hang on, let's move on to Chinatown. Have you got Chinatown of vinyl there? I can't find
it. Yeah, I have it here.
Okay, let's look
Chinatown.
At
Chinatown. So that's, I don't know, I think...
The title track, Chinatown, is maybe my favorite Lizzy song of all time.
Yeah, okay, so we agree for once.
Yeah.
Chinatown, it's even, you know, uplifted cover here.
Yeah, yeah.
So Chinatown is the best song on this album.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's staggering how fucking good it is. It's my favorite Lizzy song. Maybe my favorite song.
So this is not a good album, though. Sorry.
No. And Brian and Downey on this is just a killer on Chinatown. Yeah. I mean, it's Sugar Blues I Could Do Without. Didn't I?
Yeah.
Hey You.
Oh, okay. Killer on the Loose is good.
Yeah. Oh, Killer on the Loose is fucking classic. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. This is not. Know. I think they're fast. What am I guessing here? Maybe it's too much drugs. Maybe it's too much label pressure. The standards aren't as high.
No, I think it's a mixture of both of those things. I think there's an awful lot of... there's just some filler songs on here, you know? Having a good time. I mean, it sounds like somebody's been touring with Queen, you know? It's kind of like...
Yeah, when you say it, it's very Freddie Mercury, having a good time. No, that's true. Very, very true. But like we both agree, Chinatown, I mean, I play it on the radio at work and I just say, I introduce the song like, kids, this is how you make a fucking rock song with guitar solos, because it's like blueprint rock and roll iconic song.
It's absolutely, absolutely incredible. It's one of the fucking...
So we agree. I'm going to make a bold statement here. Without title track, it's a bad album.
Yeah, without the title track, this is Lizzie's Fly on the Wall or something.
I was going to say For Those About to Rock, because if you remove that title track, it's For Those About to Rock, not a good album.
Fair.
We agree, Avril. How weird.
Yeah, I know. But then you get to the 1980s has started now, so the things are changing. Like, you've got now Maiden and Priest, and heavy metal is sort of kicking off. I don't know, should I bother finding my copies of Renegade?
It's funny, because we are still 2 years away from Metallica.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not even the idea of Metallica and Slayer are not there yet.
No. Well, I think Renegade, the next album, is better than Chinatown, without a doubt.
Do
I have to go and look for my records now, bro? You keep talking.
They have No, it's just badly injured. Nothing special here. Nothing special.
Keep talking.
For once, they skipped Jim Fitzpatrick. So I wonder, does the Wikipedia tell us why they ditched Fitzpatrick?
No.
Too much cocaine, maybe.
Yeah. What have you got on the inside of yours?
Nothing. I like nothing. There's nothing here.
This is pretty cool. I like the band folders with the flag. They look cool as fuck.
It's a bit Soviet.
Yeah. So the thing that gets me about this record, right? I mean, fucking hell, you can't see the song.
But okay, sorry for the obvious thing here. Here in comes Snowy White.
Yeah, which is weird.
Where does he come from again?
Did he come from Grand Slam or something? Renegade, Chinatown, blah, 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 October 1980, Chris Sangarides. Wow, Chris Sangarides produced the record, okay.
He did Anvil as well, right?
Yeah, so Greatest Hits Album 81. Come on,
who is Wharton?
Darren
Wharton. Co-wrote.
Darren Wharton is the keyboard player. Okay,
The keyboard player.
Yeah. Okay, Lynott's second album, the Spillins album, was delayed until 82. Renegade was completed and released in November 81. Renegade was not successful, only reaching 38 in the UK and 157 in the US. The only two singles, Hollywood Down on Your Luck, flopped. Wow, that was the single. Only two songs on the album were written solely by Lynott. Interesting. With the other members of the band contributing more to the compositions. Now we can probably gather why that's true. I mean,
Did you say only two?
Only two.
Well, it says here three. That's weird. Okay.
Okay. I would say Fats is fucking rubbish. Mexican Blood is also, this is a bad song.
This is not in my top three. I'm sorry.
No. The song Angel of Death is fucking brilliant.
Angel of Death, a great song. I agree. Alan, this is almost like Chinatown. I'm sorry. Sorry to break it to you.
You know, you're right. It's a lot of drugs gone into this record, I think. A lot of heroin, I would imagine.
Was his thing. He was a proper druggie. He would do it all. But he was into heroin. That's usually the last drug you start taking when you're into heroin.
Yeah, I think so. I think Pressure Will Blow is a good song. No One Told Him Yet. I'm going to say side two of this is maybe the worst.
We have to take into consideration a lot of shit has gone down here.
Yeah.
A lot of tour canceling.
Yeah.
Because we are close to the end here.
Yeah.
So a lot of bad things and disappointments have been going on. They will not see the curve is not going up here.
No.
It's going down, but I have to give them that. They do go out with a bang.
Okay. Let's get to Thunder and Lightning then.
Yeah, so Thunder and Lightning is a way better album.
Yeah, I only have the CD, so you show us your record.
No, I only have a live one here.
Okay.
Collection Rocker.
Okay.
I don't have it on, I have it the CD somewhere.
I must have it on fucking vinyl.
So show me your CD, your beautiful CD.
I'm Thunder and Lightning, it does, you're right, goes out with a bang. I mean, we've got this is John Sykes, so this it's a heavier, harder record.
Yeah, but okay, so I would say this is their most heavy metal album.
Yeah, well, without a doubt. Even the cover with the spiked armband and, you know.
Even Megadeth covered Cold Sweat.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is the record that when people go, oh, Lizzy was never a heavy metal band, you go, listen to Thunder and Lightning.
Yeah, this is heavy metal.
Yeah, and...
And, arguably, it's funny, same year as Kill 'Em All comes out.
Yes, but it's still got some bangers on this. Not just only about the title track. Sun Goes Down is brilliant.
Sun Goes Down is on among the best songs ever.
Yeah.
It's an amazing song.
Yeah. And The Holy War, good. Cold Sweat, come on now.
I love Cold Sweat.
Stone Cold, one of the greatest guitar tones ever. Like, it's like Sykes fucking hauled them up by the scruff of their neck a bit, I think.
Yeah, yeah. This, you know, like we said, Renegade, Chinatown, they're being held up by one good song, great song, but there's more here.
Baby, Please Don't Go. Someday She's Gonna Hit Back. Yeah.
Why did they write the song Baby, Please Don't Go? I mean...
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, yeah.
No.
Yeah, Bad Habits, okay. Yeah, Heart Attack. I mean, yeah, Heart Attack's all right.
Okay. Write the song called Bad Habits, Heroin, Heart Attack, Cocaine. Yeah. I mean...
And also Queen Have Sheer Heart Attack. It's a bit...
Yeah.
Like, come on, guys.
Well, we do know... We do know that, like you said, having a good time. We do know that when you tour with bands, you will get influenced with them.
But there's an amazing picture somewhere of like Bon Scott, Freddie Mercury, and fucking Phil just like standing backstage somewhere in 78. Like fucking hell, you know?
Fucking hell.
But this is, to go out with as a record, this is a solid exit. Like it's a really, then the band split up and he goes to London and seems to basically... just sort of run himself into the ground with drugs and then dies in 86.
Yeah, it was, I think it was Coram who said it, the last tour of Brian Downey. They landed at Heathrow or something and they just took their suitcases and went into different taxis and that was it. That was it.
Yeah. I've done that on tours as well, though.
But yeah, I haven't broken up the band, though.
No, and gone off to take heroin. Yeah, no, it's... I remember when he died in 86, I came home from school and my mother and her sisters were sitting at the kitchen table drinking whiskey and they were just like, Phil Innes dead. They were like all fucking heartbroken and they were at the funeral and like, so, I mean, he was just this huge beloved character, even though he was living in London, had been back and forth, but he was just so indelibly part of Dublin, part of Irish musical culture, you know? But by the end, people were saying, I mean, you read the reports of people who were like calling around to his flat and he just had like dealers there and the place was a mess and proper going down the level to like sort of, you know, jungle territory, you know.
So this comes out 83.
Yeah,
he dies early 86. So he has like 2 years of being, well, unemployed from Thin Lizzy.
Yeah.
And so, at that time, he does two solo albums.
Yeah.
And there's some projects he's doing with Mark Knopfler.
Yeah, he does one. He does Adrian Vandenberg. John Sykes. Okay, member of Time Pantanka. I'm trying to catch up here. He had Grand Slam at the end of '83. They couldn't.
Who was in that? What was that again? Was that the Mark Knopfler thing?
No. When he has Out in the Fields with Gary Moore in May 85, that's like the last thing he does, you know. And then it's his last single, 19. Yeah, okay.
Something King's Revenge or King's... What is it with Mark Knopfler that I'm thinking about?
I think you're thinking of something different. There's not a mention of his name here. So he died in Salisbury, Wiltshire, 4th of January 1986, aged 36, from internal abscesses, pneumonia, and septicemia brought on by his drug dependency. Fucking hell. Multiple organ failure. Jesus. That's fucking just some heavy...
Here it is. Sorry. King's Call. Phil Lynott with Mark Knopfler.
Okay, the King's Call. I think...
It's from Solo and Soho. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Okay.
Out in the Fields is like the last gasp musically, I think, really, you know?
Okay.
Less than a minute. Upgrade now. This is going to cut off now in a minute.
Even on a budget... Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.